Welcome to the Coffee with Karen podcast, a weekly chat show discussing everything from holistic health to current affairs from a mental, physical, and spiritual perspective. Get your weekly cup of positivity with a sprinkling of woo-woo.
And we are live. So welcome to the show. It's Monday and this is going out on Mintwave radio station. So you can just ask Alexa for the radio or go to the website karenrobertscoaching.com/mintwave-radio to listen live or see the rest of our schedule for the rest of the week. If you're watching this or hearing this on a podcast, you can see other podcasts like it on our network, Raising Vibrations. Again, karenrobertscoaching.com/podcast-network. You can download the app for Apple or for Android. And please subscribe to any that take your fancy. And follow and feel free to leave any comments. So today's episode is 121. And today we have Kimberly Henry, who is the CEO, the founder of Million Dollar Memoirs. And today we're going to be talking about healing from your story. So your host, my name's Karen Roberts. We have a platform for coaches, consultants, therapists and healers. Number one, to get their message heard on the radio or having their own podcast to get their message out there, but also to help them build their business online. So if you want to get in touch, you can see where the website is, so feel free. Now, today, so we're going to be talking to Kimberly, and she is basically helping people write their story, really. As the founder of Million Dollar Memoirs, she went from corporate to helping you to write your life story and getting it out into the world. So welcome to the show, Kimberly.
Hi, Karen. Thank you for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. And if you'd like to share with the audience maybe a little bit more of your story, you say that you've come from corporate into doing what you're doing now. So, yeah, how did you get there?
Yeah, I'd love to. And what I discovered is that I worked with corporate for what I thought was 21 years. What I found out yesterday, it was actually 22 years. So it was longer than what I thought it was.
Time goes by too quick.
Seriously, yeah. And it explains why I felt like I was imprisoned. And it was like literally like checking off the time of how much time was going by. And I got to the point, it's like, it's been far too long and I can't possibly give more time or more of my life to this. And so how I got into that was I was young and pregnant and my mom had the foresight that I was going to be a single mom because I had the rose colored glasses. I was not yet at that place to be able to see what was happening. And so it seemed obvious to go into that for the security, having the regular paychecks, having the pension, having the benefits that my child would be taken care of. And I am a single mom. I raised her on my own. And so it enabled me to do what I had to do and take care of what I had to take care of. Then, now fast forward to 2021, I suddenly saw how I had a worldview that was this employment was what I thought was who I was. And so when I shifted that whole worldview and realized it served me all the up until this time. And so then what was possible so that I left that to really do what was meant for me to do, because I knew that this never aligned with me. And my body was speaking to me at the end, because day in, day out, my body was in so much pain. My chiropractor was telling me that I had to make a change.
Right.
So that's when I took the courageous leap to leave that and step into what really makes me happy with the mission of helping people to get that they can heal from writing their story. Because it's not just writing your story. It's so cathartic to go through the process and to experience that forgiveness, that compassion, and to know, like myself, I can no longer deny who I am because now I know where who I came from and where they came from, if that makes sense.
Yeah, look, so many people do the same thing, do they not? You know, yeah. We've been conditioned through schooling to, you know, do well at school, either go on to uni or college to get that good job. And like you mentioned there, it's, you know, especially being a single mum, you know, I hear you, I'm a single mum, to have that safety blanket of a regular paycheck. You know you're going to get X amount of money at the end of the month. There might be extra perks, like you mentioned, having a pension. And it's almost like we are fearful of risking anything because we could be giving all that up, right? Yeah. So, you know, you're not alone there. I'm sure there's many people out there that have found themselves in similar positions where they're in a job that they don't necessarily like. It's not, certainly not following their passion, but it's this so-called safe option at that time.
Yeah, for sure, definitely. And it served its purpose. So I'm grateful I had it because it did serve its purpose. Now it's like, now I'm really learning, shifting that mindset, because it's a different thing going in knowing what I'm doing for someone else. It's another thing to be doing it on my time, on my own, and in my way.
And scary in the beginning, isn't it?
Like I said to you when we first met, it's a journey.
Absolutely. Well, because it doesn't happen overnight. I suppose the difference is when you're working for a big company that may have been going for years and years and years and years, they already have their procedures and strategies and processes in place. You come in with possibly lots of training. Some companies don't, but in general, you know exactly what is needed to do every single day to get your job done. So you don't procrastinate about it. You don't, you know, you just get on and do the job. All of a sudden, transitioning, which I see the biggest challenge is transitioning from being an employee to being a business owner. And most people start out with their business without processes and strategies in place. So procrastination, overwhelm can set in, and it can be, it's the unknown, isn't it? We've been conditioned to be fearful of the unknown. But so what you've chosen to do, though, what brought you to that? I mean, when you say you were in corporate, what sort of work were you doing, and what made you realize that this was actually your passion?
Well, I was working with the state. And so I was basically like administrative and doing that kind of desk work. And I did the desk work that whole time for the whole 22 years, just in different offices with different things. The overall commonality of it was always serving people. So serving people who were disabled, serving people who were domestic violence victims, serving people who needed health insurance, but it was always serving others in that capacity. And what helped me to get to where I am is that once I wrote my story, I realized, well, I went to coaching school and I could use the skills that I learned there with listening. I wrote my story and I can mesh those together to help people to write their story. So then I can share that experience with people of having that peace and that forgiveness. And when you put your story out there for other people, you're inspiring others to see maybe a possibility that they don't currently see for themselves, because we all think like we're alone and we're just in it by ourselves, when true not, and we saw this when we met, that we're interconnected no matter where we are in the world.
Well, absolutely. Especially these days. I mean, the power of the internet is pretty phenomenal, isn't it? When you talk about sharing your story, I mean, everyone's got one, and everyone's been through difficult times. I mean, I'm sure you've not met anybody, I haven't yet, that's had things plain sailing and have never experienced any kind of trauma. They've had the perfect life that has led them to where they are now. So When you say about, you know, you got your story down, would you like to share with the audience a little bit about that?
Yeah. So where I came from and how I came into this world is with two alcoholic parents. And so I have a sibling. However, the age difference, I have always felt like an only child because what I experienced, and this is common, what I experienced was totally different of a childhood than her experience because of our age gap. And the eras of the generations. And so their alcoholism progressed as I got older. And so I experienced the domestic violence. I didn't know it was domestic violence then, but the throwing things at each other. And we often were evicted from homes. So when I was a teenager, I got to live with my grandmother because we were evicted once again and had no place to go. And the emotional abuse, because they were both constantly drinking, not only with each other, that emotional abuse, but really the emotional abuse that I endured as well, because my mother didn't know how to handle. And so she would shut down, which then made me feel a certain kind of way. My father, on the other hand, I'd always be batting with him because I was always making my point to him. So it was two totally different experiences with both of them. And I repeated the patterns. When I met the man that I had my daughter with, he was an addict. And so I repeated that. Then when I went through like 17, 18 years of what felt like hell with her father, with family court, CPS, Child Protective, the police, just constant. All the time things and feeling unsafe because I knew that he had the capability of doing harmful things to me and I didn't know if he would really actually do it. So I did get a full order of protection because of the constant stalking and harassment and that kind of thing. My daughter was also allegedly, which I do believe now because of what occurred with him later on, that she was sexually abused by him on an unsupervised visit. And the courts made me continue the unsupervised visits because it was alleged. So it was just all of that raising her. And so then when I really worked on myself with realizing how deeply rooted the codependency was, that I didn't know who I was. I didn't know what a relationship meant with myself, with others, with men. And I really saw just how construed it all was. And yet I went into another relationship who he wasn't an addict and he didn't have any like alcohol problems or drug problems. However, he was a repeat of my dad being emotionally unavailable and would financially like, here you go. You need money? Here you go. You want to take a trip? Here you go. Everything else was out. So until I got to that place of what am I doing with my life? Who am I? Especially when my daughter went to college on, you know, in Europe, she left and went to Europe. It really left me of who am I? I don't know what I like. I don't know what I dislike. I don't even know the deeper part, the higher part of myself, because I'd been living as a shell all of those years, surviving. And so I think I answered your question a long round ago.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it, that it's so common that we tend to repeat, and it's not knowingly, none of us do this, none of us press that self-sabotage button. Knowingly, and we certainly don't want to, but it's all linked to our programming, yes. Right? Certain things we've experienced. I mean, you know, in a very small way, I'm sure many listeners will, you know, the way they've spoken to their children before, they can almost hear their parent, you know, the words coming out of their parents' mouths, because it's an automatic response to certain things. So it would make sense that a lot of the more destructive, no wonder, you know, until we're aware And at the end of the day, we're all running around on autopilot for the majority of the day anyway, until we've really been made aware and we can look at it in the cold light of day and think, wow, you know, here, this is a pattern I'm repeating. Like, it's interesting that you've gone from one. We think that we're never, you know, if we've experienced something bad, we're not going to repeat that again, but we still take us.
Yeah.
Into the, we can run away, but we're still involved, right? So it is just such a common thing that we repeat these patterns until. So what was the moment for you where you had to sort of, you know, go within, as it were, and really sort of look at these patterns, and you obviously made a very conscious, intentional decision to change things?
Yeah, and it was a moment when I was in a transformation workshop and I had coaches that held me accountable and learning how to be with people, learning how to be in relationship with people, but also looking at that part of my past that I was still living from and realizing that I was still living from that scared 5-year-old Kimmy who often still shows up in many parts of my life.
It's a journey, isn't it? It's a journey. I mean, like with you, so what was the real shift? So you say that you were at some kind of transformation event. So you were getting coached through that. Was that where this shift happened for you to sort of actually process the healing?
Yeah, it was a combination of being in that and being in coaching school, because with the combination of two of them, then I really got to see, like I was saying, that my worldview, I hadn't even been aware of unconsciously or consciously my worldview and how I was attaching meanings to it about myself. And so when I was able to be in both of those places together simultaneously at different days, I was able to really sit back and reflect on who I've been and what do I really want going forward and what really makes me happy, what really speaks to my soul, because that's what's most important. That if life is so short, we all know this, and yet we all take it for granted, thinking that we have another day, thinking that we have another year, thinking that we have another 5 years, you know. And a lot of those coworkers that I worked with for 22 years, it's more than two handfuls of them that have passed over the 20 years since I started working with them. And if that doesn't speak to me, my best friend who is in Germany, her father suddenly passed, who was extremely healthy, had no idea that he would pass. And so all of these together was just a moment for me to really take a look at what is most important to me and how am I going to leave a legacy? What legacy am I leaving? Because that's what's most important to me. When I sat down and wrote my story, I really saw, especially the woman on both sides of the family, they never got that they mattered. They never got that their story was significant and that they had a legacy. There was so much grief and so much loss and so much sadness, and they never spoke about it. They didn't have a community. They didn't have support. And it's like, it stops here. I mean, it doesn't stop here. Then how long is going to carry on for?
Yeah, sure. Well, I suppose the thing is, you know, we all wear these hats, and you know, when you're being a mum, I mean, like you said, it's once your daughter went off to college, you know, empty nest syndrome. You know, I'm nearly there. I'm nearly there. I've got one left at home, and I never. You obviously, when you're younger, you just think you're invincible, and it's, you don't think of these things. You know, when you're younger, you're worrying about your children when they're young. You know, they don't prep you for later on when you're starting to look after elderly parents, maybe, or your children are going to start, you know, going off, and rightly so, to go on their own journey. And and then if you've been in the same job as well, it can be a confusing time, because like you said, it's, well, who am I? Because you've been mum for so long, and then all of a sudden, mum's not needed anymore. So it makes so much sense that so many, it's not just women, men do too, but, you know, that's the position that we can find ourselves in. And if we don't have something that we're truly passionate about and we're following our purpose, then yeah, no wonder it can be a challenging time and a transitional time. Mm-hmm. So for you, I mean, were you somebody that read a lot of books before? Were you into writing? What made you come to the, you know, the realization that this is what you're good at and this is what you're going to pursue?
Well, it's funny that you asked me that, because when I really thought back on this over the last 2 years, the first book that I wrote was in elementary school. I don't remember how old I was, but it was young elementary education. And I had an experience that my godmother's father was dying. And I didn't know, because I was so little, what it meant to die. Nobody was talking to me about it. He was in a separate bedroom, and they told me not to go near the bedroom. This is how I remember it, that I wasn't supposed to be near there. And I kept going to there. It was like I was gravitated. I was magnetized to be there. And so the interpretations that I made about it was that it was scary and that it was like something that was just going to be awful. And I wrote a small little book about the experience of what it was like of him dying and what wow. I saw. I wish I had it today. I don't know where it is. I'm sure I'm going to find it at some point. And so how that now impacts me today and all of the losses that I've experienced. So my mother was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer back in 2013. And I began healing with her in the 5 months of her cancer journey because I got to be with her every day. And it's so interesting, Karen, because up to that point, I'd always joke around with my parents that I was a mailman's kid. Like I literally would say when I was a teenager, "Mom, you know you had an affair with a mailman because I'm not like either of you." So one day we're sitting at her chemo treatment and I was handling it all. I was looking up organizations that would help her with food, that would help her with gas, that would help her with anything that she could get help with. As long and taking on a full-time job and having my child who was a teenager, I was doing it all and taking her to the appointments and managing her medical information. And we're in this chemo treatment and I have the computer in front of me researching things and I'm listening to her and I'm watching her, how she's engaging with each person. It didn't matter if they were the janitor, if they were a nurse, if they were a doctor, it didn't make a difference. She knew their first name. She'd, you know, respond to them by first name. And then she'd do these jokes. Like she just had a funny way, a funny sense of humor. And I looked up and I'm like, "Oh my God, I get it." And she goes, "What do you get?" I said, "All of these years, I keep joking around with the two of you that I'm not like either one of you. And now that I'm listening to you and watching you, I get how I'm like you. I got your sense of humor and I got your respectfulness of, you know, seeing people and getting people to know that they're seen and that they're heard." And she just looked at me and she's like, "Well, I'm glad you finally get it, Kim." So it's this whole journey and this whole process. And back when I left my daughter's father, back in 2000, I left. I went to poetry and I began writing poetry to be able to deal with that stress. Some of it wasn't very nice. And I knew that I could put it on paper and I wasn't going to be put in jail for doing something that I shouldn't have been doing.
Former journaling. You're just getting out your feelings. That's healthy. It's healthy to get it out because bottling up is just going to cause us more stress. Yeah. So you were doing it instinctively.
I was.
For a long period of time.
Yeah.
And so then when you finally came to sort of put it down, your story on paper, what have you discovered really after writing your story, after putting it actually down on paper?
Well, it's the realization of how deep rooted it goes through both sides of the family of why there's so much alcoholism, because the patterns of the family on both sides, there are so many people who were 9 years old when a parent died. There's so many on both sides, going right down through from what I've known now, my grandfather, right up to my nieces today. There's wow. so many of them at 9 years old who have lost a parent. So it's those repeated patterns of not knowing how to cope with having a parent who's now gone and how the other parent deals with it. So my grandmother on my father's side was disabled. She had polio. She was a widow only in her 40s. And now she's left with a 9-year-old son, my father, and he didn't know how to be a child. He then quit school to help my grandmother because all of his other siblings were doing their own thing, and including one brother who was imprisoned because he got caught up into something with some other kids. And so once I saw that picture, I finally got, like, my father had been living from that 9-year-old scared little boy that I didn't know when I was growing up.
You know? There you go. I mean, everyone, like I say, everyone's got a story, and people quite often are so quick to judge. But yeah. there's always a nobody does this to themselves deliberately. It's a coping mechanism, isn't it? So like yeah. you say, it's because of the grief yeah. that they've had to go with, and they weren't given the tools, or they didn't have anybody around them at that time, a coach or somebody else to actually mm-hmm. help them through it, help them, like you were doing, getting out your feelings onto paper. Right. I'm sure that's going to be part of the process that has helped. Yep. And it just goes to show this is the issue, isn't it? This is why people can get caught up in all sorts of things, and it doesn't mean that they're a bad person. Exactly. It means that they didn't get the help that they needed when they were the ones struggling. But I suppose, so what you've done, it sounds like you've taken a step back, and now you can see the patterns of what has gone on in your family tree.
Yes. And when I gave myself permission to write about the experience of domestic violence with my daughter's father and then her experience with that sexual abuse by him, wow, Karen, like when I went through that for all of those years, people would say to me, how do you get up each day and still come to work? How do you get your child to the sports that she's doing? Like, how are you moving each day still with all of this going on? But because I was surviving moment by moment through all of those years, I didn't allow myself to really see what I was going through. And when I gave myself permission to really write it down, it was like I was overwhelmed with the emotions because I was like, no wonder people were saying that to me. Like, you know, so giving myself that grace of, wow, I really did go through a lot just in that period of my life, not to mention all the other stuff that I've experienced.
Well, again, we don't give ourselves, you say about you weren't giving yourself permission. We're very hard on ourselves, aren't we? Yeah. Forget the judgment of others. We judge ourselves. We're the ones that we judge too yeah. harshly and don't give ourselves enough credit for. But like you say, you were on autopilot in a way, just trying to get through each day, having so much to deal with. You haven't stopped to, because I would, you know, the healing process is not necessarily going to be pretty, is it? You know, right. It's not exactly going to be an easy thing. So I suppose for some people, they feel that they've just got to keep on going, keep putting one foot in front of the other. It's not the healthy way to deal with it because you're suppressing everything. Mm-hmm. But again, we all do things how we, you know, think we can cope with the information that we have at the time. So until somebody's come into our lives and introduced us to a healthier way of dealing with it, it's I suppose the natural you've got two options, haven't you? You're either going to have a breakdown, or you just keep going unless somebody has offered you some alternatives, yeah. like journaling, getting yeah. it down there. So for you, how have you found the whole healing journey for yourself, first of all?
Well, before I answer that, there was a moment in time when I was in high school and I was somewhere around 16 to, well, 15 to 17. And I didn't know at the time this is what I was doing, but what I was doing was I was helping my father create a space where he could finally grieve being that 9-year-old boy. Each time he would come home really drunk, like being unable to walk home, and I'd walk him home from the bar, I'd ask him the same questions over and over again, repeatedly. And he always went back to being that 9-year-old boy with his father dying, with his brother showing up in shackles in a prison uniform, and he'd bawl, like crying, sobbing as that 9-year-old boy. And I thought at the time it was because I wanted to experience my father in a different way other than being angry or drunk or shut down. But what it really was is I was allowing that space for my dad because he didn't have anybody else who was having that space for him to be that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah. You've created a space for him to release all that, yeah. Where he hasn't. So that actually helped him heal, did it?
I feel like it did because he was still miserable before he died because he didn't know any other way to be. He'd get caught up in his circumstances. He'd get caught up into his failures. And this is all stuff that I'm also going through that I'm learning how to be with and not to make up stories about it. And at the same time, I feel like because of that period of time, I allowed that to be with him. He was able to let go of things that he didn't hold on to that anymore, if that makes any sense. Mm. However, he still got caught up into other things of his life because he didn't know any other way.
Right. And that's what it's all about, isn't it? We just keep doing the things that we're doing because we're yeah. not aware yeah. of another way. And it's only when, you know, some people just come in and give us the space to yeah. deal with stuff. But it's fascinating, really, how much, you know, when you're a kid, you think your parents are perfect and, you know, they're not going through any issues. And as you get older, you realize that, well, yeah, they're human too, just like you. And they've had to go through through their stuff. But isn't it amazing how yeah. much it can affect us in our adult life?
Yeah,
I don't know why we think that, you know, we're brought up to believe that, you know, that was then and now get on with it. Like, why wouldn't it be coming through?
Yeah. So then to answer your question, excuse me, about the healing process, I really am at a place where both of my parents have passed. It's been decades since my dad has passed. And it's been so many years since my mom. And I have a new relationship with my dad, even with him having been deceased for all of these years, because I'm able to be about it that I don't have to hold on to things like I was before in the past. And so now I can even look at my teenage self and how angry I was with him. It was just because I didn't feel like I was heard or seen or validated, but he didn't know how to see me. He didn't know how to hear me and he didn't know how to validate me.
Right. So forgiveness.
Definitely forgiveness. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
It always comes back to that, I suppose.
Yes, definitely.
So now where you're at right now, you are, how did you come up with this idea for the memoirs?
Yeah, Million Dollar Memoirs was born in 2022. And I was going through a process of what do I want to create? Who do I want to help? And what does it really mean? And the Million Dollar Memoirs is more about the obstacles that I went through to allow myself to give myself permission to write. And one of the main ones was to get that my story is worth something. So Million Dollar Memoirs is from the basis of everybody, like you said, has a story. And the basic thing is that we all have a story. We all have lessons to help other people to get. And that all of our story is worth even $1 million, if not more. It's more. But it starts at least $1 million, that your story is worth that. So you can get over the obstacle that thinking your story isn't significant or doesn't matter, And you can shift into allowing yourself to write it, allowing yourself to experience this forgiveness and this clarity on who you are and who you, where you came from. And you can make money from it.
Win-win. So you get paid to heal.
Yeah.
That's got to be the best way of doing it. So why do you think people are, avoiding putting their story down? You mentioned there that some people may not think that it's a worthy story. What's a worthy story? But why do you think so many avoid doing it?
Well, myself, it was the fear of experiencing those traumatic events all over again. Because who wants to go back to those times? It's so much easier to turn it off and to be blind to it, be numb to it, and keep carrying on than to really allow yourself to be with it and experience it.
Well, we're designed, aren't we, to avoid pain. We run away from pain. In fact, running away from pain is a stronger motivator than going towards your goals, going towards what you want. I get it. We talk about this a lot and stress, and it's all down to our ancient systems that were put in place for survival. And we don't need some of them. We need some of them for short periods of time, but in general, a lot of these things have been put into place from however many years ago, and are unneeded. But I suppose in order to heal, do you feel that you have to? Well, not have to. Nobody has to do anything. But if you really, really want to heal and get through it all, do you feel that it is something that, even though it might be painful, we don't have to stay there and wallow in it, but actually facing it head on and writing your story, getting it down, it's a form of therapy, isn't it? It is going to heal once and for all.
Yeah, definitely. And having a coach that's working with you is what's so key about it, because I know for myself, being raised in this environment, I still have that tendency today of I have to do it on my own. I have to do it all on my own. So no more ingrained into that unconsciousness of I have to do it on my own and it's all on me. And I chose to then work with a coach who supported me with all of these emotions that came up, then I was able to be neutral about it. Like you said, I didn't have to sit in it and wallow. That when I wrote for the first time, I chose to write about my mom and her cancer journey. And then I went deeper into it with her relationship with her mom. And then I went deeper into that, and I went into the relationship of my grandmother with her mom. And when I saw the patterns of my grandmother was 1 year old when her mom died in 1919. And by the time she was 16, she lost all of her family.
Wow.
And so, of course, she didn't know how to be a mother to my mother and how that impacted my mother. And then how that impacted and how I understood why my mother was always at arm's length. It was not until I went through the cancer journey with her that she finally laid that arm down and she let me in, because I was with her day in, day out. And so when I finally got that, it really gave me that ability to be neutral about all of it, not to wallow, not to be a victim. I could choose to be a victim, or I could choose to be totally neutral about it and have clarity and understanding. And so that's why I'm so passionate about people doing this, because when you're working with a coach, you can choose a different way of being about it, because we're so normalized to being victims.
And something you said there just about really, in a way, is accepting it.
Yes.
I suppose we want to run away instinctively because we don't want to face the pain. But, sounds harsh, but it is what it is. You can't go back and change it. So when we finally accept
yes,
what has happened. And I love that word, just being neutral about it. So yeah. Rather than, oh, woe is me, and going into victim mode, just getting it out there. See, I suppose, stepping back and looking at your story from a neutral standpoint without getting caught up in the negative emotions of it, but still looking at it as your adult self.
Yes.
So that you can be neutral, is I suppose, part of the process.
Yeah. And so when I started writing about my mom, it only took me 5 days to write about what I wanted to write about with her. And I cried so much in those 5 days. And I chose not to go back to being that scared little girl of crying, because crying was always a negative thing for me. So I chose to just sit and cry and be with it. And I didn't have to make up anything about it. And so when that 5 days was over and I cried and I bawled my eyes out, I felt like the Grinch, and my heart just grew like 10 times bigger.
Right. Well, you've relieved it. You finally let it go. I suppose, again, we've been brought up to you know, keep it all in. Don't show the emotion, and we shouldn't cry, and that's a sign of weakness. All these things that we've been conditioned, and I get it. Again, it's come from generational stuff, or society has made us that way. I don't know, as a way of dealing with past things that have, you know, gone on, wars, and dealing with after the Second World War, and then that's how they've dealt with it. So that's how what gets passed down from generation to generation. But do you think things are changing? Do you think people are realizing that actually maybe there's a better way?
Yeah, that's what I love about the time that we're in right now. There's so much education. People want information. People want coaches. They want accountability. They want to let go of these narratives about having to do it all on their own or being too scared. Like, it's such a wonderful time to be in right now, because where it was 20 years ago, there was not as much education as there is today.
We've got it all there at our fingertips. Being ignorant is a choice, isn't it?
Yeah.
And also, I love what you're saying about having a coach. I think everybody needs a coach for different things throughout their life, because we don't have to be alone. And going back to what you said really right at the beginning about so many people think this is just happening to them. Yeah. And by hearing other people's stories, they can realize that, no, it's not just you. There are other people going through it. And that's then an inspiration for others. Because why do it all? I don't know. Again, we've just been brought up to, you know, no, we can't ask for help, because we must do this by ourselves. Exactly. Because otherwise that means we've failed. But, you know, why do that? Why not speed things up, get it done with a coach? So with what you do and what you offer, so you're helping people get their story down. How do you work? I mean, if anybody's out there and maybe the thought of, oh, that's going to take so long, or the overwhelm, but it doesn't have to be like that if they're working with you. So how do you work with your clients?
The two main things of how I work is working with me. So that means they're writing and I'm coaching them. I'm working them through the being afraid of the emotions, being afraid of reliving the experiences, the procrastination of what you said before, which is really fear. And I hate to break it to y'all who are writers, but there is no writer's block. Writer's block is fear and perfection. So working through all of those things, and like you said, it doesn't have to take a long time. It's what you're choosing to do. So if you choose that you want to write it in a period of time, we work out a very clear, precise, concise plan on what gets to happen so that you get it done in that period of time. Who do you get to be? What do you get to do to make that happen? And having that accountability, which was the key for me of getting it done. I did not start writing. This was a workshop that was, I think, 90 days. And I told my coach I was going to write. And I procrastinated, and I procrastinated, and I procrastinated. It wasn't until the last week of this workshop that my coach, literally every time I met with him, Kim, when are you going to get it done? Kimberly, when are you going to do it? And then finally in that last week, I'm like, all right, I'm tired of you asking me when I'm going to do it. I'll do it.
Isn't that funny? Like you said, 22 years, you were in a corporate job.
Yeah.
If you had waited 90 days to get a job done, you possibly would have lost your job, would you not?
Yes, exactly. So it's all about the mindset.
Isn't it funny when it's, yeah. But this is why, yeah, so there you go. So if you didn't have that coach, you may not have ever got it done.
I went off.
You were putting it off. Isn't that funny? And this is why I think it is. I think there's a coach for everyone.
Yes.
For solving all sorts of problems, because again, it's ingrained in us. We will work better under pressure for some things, right? And depending on how much pressure that is, but you know, having, like you mentioned, having somebody to be accountable to, so that you don't keep putting off and you don't keep procrastinating. So yes. Far better to get to, so is 90, I mean, you know, what is it about 90 days? There's something about 90-day programs that does seem to work. I mean, I come from completely different industry. Even, you know, when I was in the fitness industry, the whole thing of if you want to change your body, it's not going to happen in a week. It's not going to happen. 90 days.
Yeah.
Is a good amount of time to see transformation on every level, whether it's to do with your body, whether it's to do with your health, whether it's to do with your business.
Yeah.
There's something about that amount of time.
Yeah.
But only if you do have a coach. Like, it took me a long time to create my program without a coach because I was putting off and procrastinating.
Yeah.
The moment you have that, I'm the same. I work much better with having some form of accountability.
Yes.
Because left to my own devices, like many people, I can get complacent and, I'll do that tomorrow. When you've got to get it done, guess what happens? You get it done.
Exactly.
So for anybody out there who's been maybe procrastinating about writing a book or, you know, getting their stuff down, they can, you mentioned there, you can do it with you.
Yes.
Or the other option.
Or I can do it for them. Because depending on what's happening in their lives and what's going on, some people just want somebody else to do that. So then that would look like sending me voice messages of their stories or meeting weekly. And so a combination of both, because it depends on how you learn. I'm a very visual person, so I like to see people, and that works best for me. So, yeah. And then that would be over, depending on what they're looking at, what is their vision? Because it's really going down to what do they see? In both scenarios, when I'm working with them too, it's what is their vision? What do they want to create? What do they see for it?
Hmm. So for the listeners out there, they're sort of been toying about it and they're like, right, okay, I'm going to make this happen this year. How do they get in touch with you?
To book a discovery call with me from my website. And I want to thank you, Karen, for having me on. And as a thank you gift, I also have a free ebook for your listeners. That is the 5 ways to recover from your own personal trauma. And so then they can go through that and they can start the process of working out, releasing this trauma, just starting it with some basic steps from the ebook.
Brilliant. So for anybody who's watching this, and they can see the links down there, but to anybody who's just listening in, what is your website?
I'm going to say the whole entire thing, which people don't usually say, https://... KimberlyHenryCoaching.com. And I say the whole thing because if you Google KimberlyHenryCoaching.com, you're going to get some other Kimberly Henry. There's lots of us around.
There you go. Well, that's it. But yeah, keep it simple. So KimberlyHenryCoaching.com. And so there's where will they find that ebook? On your website?
They're going to find it right there, that they're going to click free ebook. And then to click and just schedule a discovery call, that's the first tab that you click that tab, and that's going to take you right to the schedule and schedule a time with me. Very simple, very quick, very concise. It's not going to take a lot of time. It's not complicated.
Well, that's it. Keep it simple. Keep it simple. Yeah. Well, I mean, writing a book, it's not been something on my list. See, I'll do this. I'll talk.
Yeah.
I'll talk it rather than write it. Yes. It seems to be you're either one way or another. Maybe one day. Maybe one day I'll get it
down.
An
audiobook.
Sorry? Yeah, an audiobook.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. I mean, yeah. That is, I have to say, I'm going to be honest, I haven't read a book for a very long time since I signed up to Audible. All my books are on. So I'm sure I fell asleep with my headphones on last night. I'm not sure, but I think it was a Joe Dispenza workshop that I was listening to. I must have fallen asleep to it. Because that for me is, but then other than, and this is why everyone's so different. There's other people like my daughter, she likes a physical book. She doesn't want to read it on her phone. She doesn't want a Kindle. No, she wants to have the physical book. And well, she'll get caught up for days actually once she gets in a good book. But, so these, you know, I love what you're doing because it's a bit of a combo. It's you're helping people in a holistic way deal with their trauma at the same time as helping them actually make an income from it. And so when you write it, what is the next step?
So then it's connecting to the person who's going to help publish it. I do not do the publishing part of it. I do help with the editing part. It's connecting to getting it published. And that, it doesn't have to be complicated. It can be self-publishing through Amazon. So I feel like that's also like a myth that's in our society, that to publish a book means that you got to find like a big time publisher, that you have to find this big like thing and do this big thing and spend a lot of money. And that's also the beautiful thing about living in this time. You self-publish, you get it done quickly, you get it out there. And so the whole thing is you want to start talking, like if being on social media, you want to start talking about your story. You want to start talking about asking people ideas. What is a good title for my book? Or is this a good cover for my book? Just having those basic things, you're enrolling people into your story. So you're already marketing. So the marketing doesn't even have to be hard.
Well, the marketing is the book.
Yeah.
Well, everybody loves the story. It's the oldest thing, isn't it, really? You know, we do, you know, this is why people, I mean, not that I don't even have a telly, but so I don't watch a lot of these, you know, the soap operas or anything. But that is why most people are sort of hooked on telly, because they love a good story. We like to hear people's stories. And even if it is something that's, you know, people are dealing with and they are recovering from certain trauma, again, like you said, it's about inspiring others to, you know, if they're thinking, oh, you know, I went through that too, and oh well, they've come out of it the other side and thriving, so could I. So it sounds like what you're offering people is quite it's an all-round holistic approach to dealing with stuff so that you can move forward and you can thrive and that you can follow your purpose. And so with people that you're looking for, is there anybody in particular or any sort of more niche that you love to work with?
You know, really it's the entrepreneurs who have chosen to step out of that comfort zone to create something that they didn't know was there before, and that they now look back and they see their story and what they've overcome, what they've persevered through. And in those are the lessons to share with people. It's not the mundane of the horrible, horrific things that we went through, because I went through some horrific things that I, you know, have overcome. And it's not the actual things that happened. It's the lessons that I took away from it. So it's the entrepreneurs who are now seeing that what they're working through and what they're creating and how what happened in the past has really helped with them being where they are today, and that they're willing to step into that their story is significant and that their story matters and that it can help other people.
And that's the truth of it, isn't it? At the end of the day, you wouldn't be who you are today if you hadn't have gone through it. So, you know, not that like we all want, you know, our kids and to everybody to have this perfect life and be wrapped in cotton wool. It's never that case.
Right.
And actually, when you have fully healed, you can actually look back and be grateful for the lessons. Like you say, it's not about the thing. It's about how you got up and dealt with that thing. Doesn't matter if you didn't get up for a long while. Doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. It's irrelevant. It's not a race, is it?
Exactly.
It's not like, I won. I got it first.
Exactly. And, you know, like going back to what you were saying a little while ago, when I was a teenager and I thought that it was only me going through this because I didn't understand that there are other people who had alcoholic parents because I felt so alone and I felt lonely and alone. I went to, and I had to actually go to the library and I had to look through the book catalog and I had to find a book. And I went to celebrities because that's what our mainstream brings us in our face. And as a teenager, that's what I was interested in, was people who established themselves living a life that seemed to be something more than what I thought was possible for myself. So I went to Suzanne Somers, who had alcoholism in her story. And then Oprah Winfrey, who experienced and endured all kinds of abuse. And so I went to those stories. And once I like read them and I was, wow, these people endured this. If they can endure it, it's like you said before, that if they endured it, then it is possible for me. Just who do I get to go to? And so as a kid, I learned that I had people accessed in my life that I could go and ask for support. I went to counselors in school. It was the only reason why I graduated from school, was because I had a counselor that I could see, especially every Monday. The weekends were the hardest to get through. And so every Monday, I had the ability to walk into his office. He let me scream into a pillow. He let me throw stuff at the wall. He listened to me. He gave me meditation possibility. Asking for that support was huge. Because if I did not ask for that support, I guarantee you I would not be talking to you at this moment.
Well, you don't ask, don't get. I mean, exactly. You know, that's one thing for sure. You're not going to get anything if you don't ask. Exactly. And I suppose that is the thing, is because things weren't spoken about, that's why so many people do feel alone. So, look, thank you so much for your time today. And thank you for being honest and open and vulnerable and putting it out there so that you can inspire others. So, yeah, if anybody wants to actually get it down finally and finally heal through any of that trauma, then please get in touch. And for the rest of you, then if you want to talk it through, get in touch. There's different ways of doing things, whatever resonates with you. And so, yeah, thank you for your time. And I will be back on Tuesday. So bye for now.
Coffee with Karen podcast, a weekly chat show discussing everything from holistic health to current affairs from a mental, physical, and spiritual perspective. Get your weekly cup of positivity with a sprinkling of woo-woo.